We use microphones for community meetings, but we are recording this meeting so that we can have it available on the website, so anyone who wasn't able to come tonight has access to the same information that you all have information. So that's why we are using very formal microphones, so please excuse us. I'm Krista Gardner. I'm the Nature and Neighborhoods Grants Coordinator, and this is Heather Nelson-Kent, who is the Program Manager for the Nature and Neighborhoods Grants Program.
Welcome. We're really glad to have you here. Thanks for coming and taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us tonight. We'll start out just by telling a little bit of, giving a little bit of background about the Metro Grants Program and why we have these funds, and then walk through some of the program goals that we have, make sure that your projects can fit our goals, and how to apply and all the sort of the logistics for how to apply, and then talk about some examples of successful past projects so you can get a little bit of information about what makes a really compelling project, because these are pretty competitive grants, so we want to make sure you have all the information to be competitive.
So one of our grant requirements is partnerships. So in the spirit of that, I want to ask each one of you to introduce yourself, and if you are working with an organization and if you know what your project might be, if you want to say your name, your organization, and a quick summary of your project, that would be great.
And we're going to hand the microphones for the same reason, just so people can hear.
I'm Jim Card, and I'm with the Gresham Ebisu Sister City Association. Our project is a Japanese garden at Main City Park. We are part of what we also call Friends of Sudu Island.
And I'm also with, my name is Tomiko Takeuchi. I'm also with the Sister City, and we don't have an absolute plan. We came here to figure out what's going on.
Hi, I'm John Hoffnagel from the Oregon State Parks Foundation, and I'm intending to work at McIver State Park on a stream restoration project.
Hi, my name is Scott Sutton. I'm kind of working on a couple different projects, but the partnerships would potentially be local watershed organizations and some other kind of arts organizations, nonprofits.
Hi, I'm Jill Gear. I'm with OMSI, and we are working with some of the partners of sustainability and the Parks Department in renovating or cleaning up one of our areas along the waterfront.
I'm Chris Duncan, and our umbrella organization is the ROWL, Resiliency Organization of West Lynn, but we're connected to four active neighborhood associations, as well as Friends of Maddox Woods, which is kind of the target area of our focus right now. It has a very large heron rookery on an island that is getting kind of overrun by, well, of the ivy, and blackberries are actually keeping people out of the nest, so that's kind of good. But anyway, we need a lot of cleanup.
I've heard of that group. That's great. Thanks for being here.
I'm Erin Goodell. I'm with the Lower Columbia Estuary Partnership, and we have identified some land on Savi Island that we are still in the process of figuring out all the details, but that needs some rehabilitation, especially blackberry removal.
I'm Zane Potter with the Metro Auditor's Office, and we're at the beginning stages of a review of the Nature and Neighborhoods program, so we're just here to learn about the program.
I'm Simone Reddy. I'm also with the Auditor's Office, and I'm just here to observe.
Hi, I'm Sharon Salvaggio. I'm with Northwest Center for Alternatives to Pesticides, and I'm working together with the City of Wilsonville and the Westland-Wilsonville School District and Northwest Youth Corps to put in for a project that will expand pollinator habitat in the city of Wilsonville, engage the city in IPM planning process and implementation, and create neighborhood outreach and kits for pollinator health and at home.
Hi, I'm Heather Wheeler. My business is called Bloom with Nature, and I'm an arborist and green space designer, and I'm working with other arborists, and I'm not exactly who else I'm going to partner with yet, but we'd like to study cavity-dwelling birds in neighborhoods and wildlife snags and the types of things that you can do to, as arborists, to make wildlife snags successfully used by birds in neighborhoods, and also maybe like rural places. We're not sure yet, but that's the project so far.
Hi, I'm Suzanne Easton, and I'm the grants manager at East Multnomah Soil and Water Conservation District. So I'm here to observe my colleagues and see how they put on their grants workshop and hopefully learn a few things. But we also have a grants program, and we often are matches for each other's grants when we both fund the same project. But if you are interested in grants at East Multnomah, please check our website, and I also have cards here, which I'm happy to share with you.
I'm Len Nelson. I'm a city councilor for the city of Gladstone, and I'm just here to observe and bring some paperwork back to our new mayor. First time in 36 years we got a new mayor, and so we're going to try to bring him up to speed. And my daughter here, Tammy, is the one that said, you need to go, Dad, and listen. So,
Tammy Stemple, City of Gladstone Planning Commission. We've got quite a few projects that we're looking at, but specifically we have a 3.2-acre beautiful spot along the Clackamas River that we'd like to turn into a park, and also have non-motorized watercraft access for the Oregon City Cove, the Clackamas River, and Willamette River.
Great, thank you so much. As you can hear, there's a good variety of both types of projects and locations of projects. We've got the region pretty well covered, so that's always fun to hear. All right, so as I mentioned, I just want to talk a little bit about why we even have these grants here at Metro and what we are, what we do here at Metro. So, you know, part of the charge for Metro is to work with our 25 cities, 3 counties, hundreds, literally, of partner organizations in the region who are really taking care of the natural systems in this region, clean water, fish and wildlife habitat, and helping make sure that people learn about nature and those systems and take care of them for the future. And one of the ways that we've been able to do this is we've gone out to voters and we've asked them to approve funding for these purposes, and they've agreed to do that. So the grants we're talking about tonight, the restoration and stewardship, community stewardship grants, are funded through a 5-year local option levy that voters passed in 2013. And we also have grants through our bond measure that voters approved in 2006, and those are for capital projects. The projects that are funded through the restoration and community stewardship levy funds can be capital projects, but they don't have to be, which is the difference with bond funds. Capital projects are the only types of projects that are eligible, but with the restoration and community stewardship, they don't need to meet that standard, and that's a high bar for some restoration projects. In the levy that we passed in 2013, voters were asked to fund a number of different activities, primarily on Metro land, the land that we have acquired over the past 20 years, protecting land for fish and wildlife habitat, water quality, the natural areas that people can use in the future. And you can see from this little pie chart that about half of the funds from that levy are really targeted for maintenance and restoration of those lands, And about half, the one, the side that has little slices of pie, are really more focused on people and access to nature and providing experiences for people in nature and to learn more about nature. And that's where the community grants falls into that side of the pie. Welcome. Our grants have a lot of purposes, really, goals. I've talked about a few of these. To connect people with their watershed, to preserve and restore that wildlife habitat that we have in our region, support other conservation initiatives. One of the things that our grant review committees often find really compelling is to understand how an individual project fits into other conservation efforts in the region or in a particular area and is helping build on another project. We want to expand nature education. Primarily we do that through our conservation education grants, but the restoration grants often have an element of that education as well through the community stewardship aspects. A big focus for this levy has been to connect with communities that haven't traditionally participated in our parks and natural area programs or might not benefit as directly from some of these investments. So we are really specific in the levy that we're reaching out to low-income and minority communities. And finally, we do have a small portion of these grant funds that are going to be used for some trail grants. And the information about that is going to be available this summer and fall. So, this grant program, right now we have two types of grants, large and small. The large grants, maximum is $100,000 for the project, and it can last up to 3 years. The small grants are $25,000, up to $25,000, and those are typically two-year projects. That's the maximum length. The large grants, we do allow a couple of additional years for maintenance activities after that three-year period. We've learned ourselves and from our partners that that's really important to keep doing that maintenance of some of these restoration projects for at least 5 years, and so we do allow projects to extend over after the basic project is completed. And this year, we have $600,000 available to award. Last year, what was the total request?
The total request, we had 47 grant pre-applications, and we awarded 14 grants, and the total amount requested was over $2 million.
Right, so pretty competitive. Next year we'll have a little bit of money, $200,000 available. We'll probably only be offering the small grants next year. Question?
Yeah, is there typically a size of land?
Good question. The question was whether there's a size of a project, acreage-wise, based on the small or the large grants. And not really. They really do range in size. We did have a pretty expensive small project awarded this year, that culvert project.
We do. We have a review committee, and we'll talk a little bit more about our process in the presentation. But that review committee, they all come with their own professional expertise, and so that is one aspect. The cost per acre that some of our review committee members do take into account when they're looking at the grant applications. But as Heather said, there's a variety of costs per acre that have been accepted through this grant program.
We'll have a couple examples of both large in amount and size tonight we can talk about. Yeah, question. Do either of the categories tend to be more competitive? No, because they're kind of lumped together. But That said, we do give fewer of the large grants, just by definition. Not by definition. We have kind of earmarked $300,000 or $400,000 for the large grants, and then the rest for the small grants. So just because of the size. And last time, I think we had about an equal number of applications for large and small. So in that way, the large grants are probably more competitive. Yes. The question is about whether or not that $25,000 is a maximum for the small grants, and in general, it is. We have seen a few applications that come in a little bit higher than that, but generally, that's just our threshold. It's not a line in the sand. We're not that kind of a grant program.
Yeah, it's not a hard $25,000. The difference is that if you apply for something over $25,000, then during the review process, you might be reviewed in comparison to the other projects that are $25,000 to $100,000. So it really is just what your comparison is and how competitive your program would be in that setting. So in terms of who is eligible for restoration grants, a wide variety of organizations, including individuals, nonprofits, private businesses, are eligible to apply for these grants. However, that said, we ask that those organizations that do not have a 501c3 find a fiscal agent in order to do that processing for them. So unless you're, of course, a 501c3 yourself, or you're a local government, school, or other exempt organization.
Any questions about that? Okay.
So some of our kind of overarching program goals are to address the program goals, which Heather will go over some examples that really explain those goals and how they're applied. We require 3 partners as minimum. So again, look around the room and see if there is someone that you might potentially want to partner with. If you would like suggestions of partners, we can provide you with lists of people who have applied to our grants in the past to see who might be interested in partnering with you. All of our small grants, as Heather mentioned, we ask that they're completed within 24 months and the larger grants within 36 months. And then again, as Heather mentioned, adding that time for maintenance to really ensure that the restoration project is successful over the long term. Yeah, we allow for 10% of the cost of your project to be allocated for maintenance costs, and that can be, above and beyond that 24 months or that 36 months. And that was at the advice of our restoration biologists and technicians who have seen that is really what is necessary to ensure that these projects are successful. In terms of the financial requirements of the grant program, we do require a one-to-one match. For a lot of community stewardship grants, that one-to-one match is provided through volunteer time. We use a federal standard for volunteer time, which is around $21 per hour, and that information can be found in our packet. So a lot of smaller organizations do use that volunteer time as their match. Other organizations use grants such as the East Multnomah Soil and Water Conservation District or the Clean Water Services, CWSP. I always mess that up, CWSP. Community Watershed Stewardship Program. those funds as their match, as well as some foundations or other organizations. We do require that you have at least your first year funding match secured at the time of your full application, and Metro funds cannot be your match. Overhead costs is something that often trips people up. In the case of our program, overhead costs are things like rent and utilities, and we do allow 10% of your project cost to be overhead costs. Some organizations also use that to pay their fiscal administration, so that 501c3, if you don't already have that, that designation yourself. And then, like we mentioned earlier, we allow for maintenance costs up to 10%. Do you have questions? Yeah. So the question was about volunteer time and how do you determine whether you secure that. We have a trust basis that if you say you're going to come with 200 volunteers during that first year, that you will secure those 200 volunteers that first year. So
generally people have a plan that seems, you know, seems reasonable for how they're going to get there, and they can kind of say, we're going to do these number of events, we expect these number of people, and they're going to work these number of hours, and that adds up to 200 hours of volunteers, and therefore we have $4,000 worth of match, things sort of like that.
And generally speaking, in our grants, we haven't found that to be a problem. Generally, people go above and beyond what they expect in terms of volunteer match. Location. The location of any of these restoration grants is meant to be within the urban growth boundary or to serve the metro residents, and the reason for that is because this is a tax-funded grant program, and those taxes come from within the urban growth boundary or metro's jurisdiction. So that's why we have that requirement. And they can occur on either public, private, or metro property. If they do occur on metro property, we ask that it is really a community-identified need. And the intent of these grants is really to serve the community, and we have metro funds to fund metro projects on metro property.
And for the private lands, if your project is on private land and we have funded those types of projects, you really have to demonstrate that you have a community benefit and that and not an individual is not benefiting from the grant funds, but that, that there's a community benefit. So, for example, we've funded watershed councils or other organizations who might have a number of projects. Some would be public lands, and then maybe there's a private landowner next door, maybe another piece of public land. And so they're doing restoration. There's a great economy of scale or being able to put together a number of different properties and restore them all together. And that's the type of project that usually meets our test for a public benefit.
And if the property is not your own, we do request written permission by the landowner for the project at the time of your full application. The projects can't take the place of required mitigation. So, for example, if you need the project in order to secure permits for development or other state-required or local jurisdiction-required mitigation, this grant fund does not pay for those types of improvements. Any questions about these? I'll turn. Yeah.
I guess I might have a question. What's the distinction between the metro urban growth boundary and the counties that are part of metro? Mm-hmm.
Yes, that does. Thank you for pointing that out. Yeah. So if you see on that map, The areas in outlines mostly in yellow are the urban growth boundaries. So Metro covers the 26 cities and 3 counties within the Metro area. However, there are areas of the counties that are rural in nature, and Metro does not have jurisdiction over those areas.
We have a feature on our website on the Metro. If you go to the Metro Council page and ask, or there's a urban growth boundary lookup tool, you can put your address in there and see whether or not you're actually inside the boundary or outside the boundary, which district, which council district you're in. That's right. So MacGyver would be an example of where you'd have to make the case that you're serving primarily metro area residents, and so you'd have to come up with a justification for making that case. Any other questions about that location? So this is the sort of getting back to the overall purpose: support and create partnerships in local communities to improve water quality, fish and wildlife habitat, and connect people with nature. And it's this program, as Krista mentioned, is just as much about the partnerships as it is about the projects themselves. That has always been a real hallmark of this project, that we wanted to bring the community together to make these investments together, and then hopefully will lead to long-term care and stewardship of our natural resources in this area.
So the way that we've kind of divided up that purpose is really to follow the lead of the regional conservation strategy. So that might be something that you want to take a look at if you haven't already. But the regional conservation strategy was developed over the last few years, and it really looked at some goals and guidance for restoration of natural areas, both within the urban core and also within the areas that are still remain very natural within the Portland metro area. And so based on that work with the regional conservation strategy, we've divided these into the community stewardship in developed areas, which is really intended to be those areas that are more developed or more urban in nature. That could also include suburban areas, but more small parcel, there's people around, it's more developed in nature, or restoration in natural areas, which are areas that need to continue to be preserved as natural. And as Heather mentioned, we have 2 goals in this program. One is really focusing on habitat restoration and the good of the habitat, so preserving and restoring fish and wildlife habitat. And the second goal is really about people and people's access to nature and people's connection to nature. So increasing people's awareness and engaging people in learning about protecting and managing natural areas at the community level. So that's really about community stewardship. Yeah, we have seen, so both Goal 1 and Goal 2 are required for each one of the projects that are being applied for in this grant program. And Goal 2 has been used for both engaging the public through community meetings or volunteer work, as well as through things like signage or other means.
We like to talk about these projects as kind of falling on a spectrum. Some are really focused more on the restoration benefits. summer maybe focus more on some of the community engagement benefits, but all projects need to have some element of both of those.
And Heather will talk a little bit more about how those goals really apply when you're looking at your project. So here are a couple of examples.
So a project that we funded a couple of years ago is a Solve project, and maybe some of you are familiar with Solve, but they're a local nonprofit organization that does a lot of work in our natural areas to fight weeds and improve local habitat. And they did this project they've done many projects in Beaver Creek, which is in the Troutdale area. There's also a Beaverton Beaver Creek, but this is the Troutdale one. And they had a couple goals, under the goal for ecological benefits, they had some goals around water quality. They have fish in this creek. They wanted to control non-natives and plant trees and diversify the plant community along Beaver Creek. Can I go to the next slide? And this is just a great example from their final report of one of their photo points. So you can see this is all that green stuff, non-native invasive species, and you can see the little bridge in the background and the shed along the creek. And this is during their restoration phase, obviously. So this is after they had done some of their weed removal and begun to establish some more native plants in the area. Yes?
So are you saying that this non-native material was eradicated and this is part of that restoration after some plants were...
Yeah, this is the in-process project photo. Yeah, those are weeds that they took out and they've been starting to revegetate. Add plants back along that stream corridor. So a lot of people don't know that the picture on the right actually is better habitat than the picture on the left, but it is true. Solve really falls on that spectrum of a lot of community engagement in their projects. That's a big part of the project that we funded here. And so they really focus on lots of different partnerships because they do a lot of events to get those weeds removed, get plants in the ground, and maintain them. And they, for this grant, use a couple different types of partnerships. So they have these green teams that are school-based programs, and then they have this team up for community watershed health that's really focused on community groups and community special events, and then trainings. They do education training. So you asked about whether or not the funds could be used for those types of activities too. So this part of the project, they did this project with putting salmon, dead salmon, back into the river to provide more nutrients to that creek. And they call it a fish fling, I think, or a salmon toss. And so the kids are dissecting these dead salmon and checking everything out, all the blood and guts, and then getting a chance to throw them back into the river and add a few more nutrients to that river, so that creek. So thanks. I love this girl's face up here. I don't know if you can see her, but she's making this like... So this project, this is a good example of one of the smaller grants, $25,000 award for Metro. But you can see the total project value was valued at $88,000. And most of their money came from volunteer contributions, 2,000 hours of volunteers. So in-kind contributions, pretty small. Matching contributions, another piece of the puzzle for them. So that's a pretty typical project for what we see. We only require a one-to-one match, and we do not rank projects based on overmatch. By having more match, you don't compete more compete more strongly with against the other projects. But it is typical that we will see up to a 4-to-1 match by the end of these projects. And I'll just say a couple things about their volunteer contributions, and we may go over this later, but the school volunteers, youth who volunteer during school instructional time cannot be counted as volunteers. They're required to be there. But if they come after school, so in this case with these green teams, these are usually eco clubs that do after school activities, or sometimes kids are doing their community service projects and they're coming out and leading teams or mentoring other kids, not during instructional time. And those volunteer hours for students can be counted. Yeah, question. It was, yeah. Small grant. And then this project is more in the category of these natural areas. This is Camassia Natural Area. It's in West Lynn. West Lynners, you probably know this project. This is a great natural area that is owned and managed by the Nature Conservancy up on the bluff looking over the river in West Lynn. And it's an incredible oak savanna habitat. The Nature Conservancy owns a large portion, but then they had some partners nearby who also were landowners there. So one was the school district, and then I think it was the county that owned some of the other land. And the Nature Conservancy had a lot of expertise in managing their site, getting rid of the invasive species there, managing for oak habitat, which is a pretty specialized and rare habitat in the Willamette Valley. And their partner, their adjacent landowners did not have this expertise. And they wanted to work with the other landowners there to develop a joint management plan so that the whole area could be managed with sort of the same intention and purpose. And so it ended up being about a 160-acre site altogether. So the Nature Conservancy really brought their scientific expertise and knowledge about land management and restoration to the planning process and engaged these other landowners. And then the landowners brought their a lot of volunteers to the project. So it was a great partnership that way, where they each had something really significant to contribute. And they did end up restoring a small portion of the site, 16 acres. They did some work on tree removal of some of the conifer trees that were competing with oak. Oak are very slow growing. Fir, Douglas fir, are very fast growing. And if they shade out the oaks will die. And oaks are much more rare than Douglas fir in this region. So they removed some trees and invasive species and planted some native plants. And that was a really successful project. And then, as I said, the school and some of their other partners brought the volunteers and the community into the project to actually do the work on the ground. And that's where most of their volunteer hours and community engagement aspects of the project came in. And this project was funded also at that $25,000 level, so it's also a small grant. And again, it's achieving a similar overall project cost. So they need a little bit more cash match on this project than the other one, but still significant volunteer time to match and leverage these funds. And that's really typical for a lot of these smaller grants. For the larger grants, sometimes it's hard to get to that level of volunteer engagement, and we typically will see more cash match on the larger restoration projects, but not always. So,
are there any questions about those two examples?
So I'm going to go over some of the nitty-gritty. Did you have a question?
So when you're looking at the
That's a good question. We actually, we ask that whatever reimbursement request you turn in to us has that one-to-one match. So, for example, if during those first 6 months you are purchasing $5,000 worth of bare root plants, we ask that you also have documentation of either volunteer time or a cash match for that same amount.
Yeah, so you're providing your match as you go with each reimbursement request. And that would be the same for the maintenance portion as well of the agreement. And the maintenance, we've never done this before with the maintenance agreements. This is a new addition to our grant program, so there will be a few projects that we'll get to work out a few of the details maybe in this coming years after they finish their grants. Yes, another question. Okay, the question is about formal support letters. For the pre-application, so Krista has mentioned a couple times full application, things that are needed at your full application, letter from a landowner. What was the other thing?
Well, we'll go over in a few slides, but it's we ask for those letters of support during the full application. So basically the first portion of the application process, the two-step process, is the pre-application. And in the pre-application, we're basically asking you to make your case or to tell your story. And then we ask in the full application, that second step, we ask for the detail and the documentation to show us that your project indeed is feasible the way you told the story in the pre-application phase.
Yeah. So the letters aren't required until the full application, but so you can just say who your partners are or who you're approaching to be a partner. Sometimes people don't have all their partnerships firmed up, or they're still in a conversation with different partners, and that's fine to say that, state that in your pre-application.
Yeah, no, the matching, the volunteer match counts as match. So Yeah, and that's very, as Heather said, that's very typical for our grants. It's not required. Our requirement is a one-to-one match, but often, I think in part because of the volunteer contributions, it goes over that ratio.
Yes, that can be used later. So if you have a submittal for reimbursement of $5,000 and you've got $10,000 worth of match in that submittal, you can submit up to $5,000 of reimbursement requests without showing additional match. Does that answer your question? Yeah. Let's finish this little part, and then we'll go on to a little bit more of the details about the application and some of the more of the nitty-gritty.
So the schedule, April 21st is the deadline for pre-applications. The reason we ask for 4 p.m. is so that Heather and I are still at our desks
And so if there's a computer malfunction or the online is not working or email is not working, that we are at our desk to answer your phone calls. So that's really the reason for that and why we ask you to get them in to us by 4 p.m. In terms of the process, between April 21st and the end of May or early June, we will have our review committee review those pre-applications and recommend those applications to invite for full application. And those full applications then will be invited to apply in the end of May with those applications due in June. Oh, July. Thank you. We anticipate grant awards in either August or September. This grant program and the decision-making is by the Metro Council. We have a review committee that recommends to our Metro Council, and our Metro Council is the final decision-maker. And so they'll make a formal formal decision-making in August or September, and then the funds will be available in September. You can wait until it's a good planting season, yes. One of the reasons that we have this application process in the summer is that many planting projects occur in the winter, and we want to give that opportunity to you.
So, in Clackamas County, for instance, would C4 be involved in the recommendation of which ones go final, or is it completely separate from the coordinating committee?
It's separate from the coordinating committee, yeah. So, the process is we have a review committee here that is made up of technical professionals that have expertise in restoration, in conservation education, in volunteer management, in other areas that are relevant to the work that you do. It's basically a peer review, and they recommend then that to the Metro Council, which makes the final decision. So I'm going to go over the pre-application, and all of this information is available to you in the if you wanted to follow along in the pre-application handbook. So I'm just going to go over some of this nitty-gritty detail. Does anybody need one of these? Okay. All the materials are on the back table. So the pre-application is broken into these different sections, and this is also how we ask the review committee to review your grant application. So to make it very transparent, these are the grant criteria that we ask our review committee to use in evaluating your project. So that first piece, the organizational preparedness, do you have the capability, does your organization have the capability to complete this project? And if not, who are you partnering with, or who are you planning on hiring to help you have that capability to be able to implement the project the way you would like it to be implemented? The well-designed project, that you've really thought about what the project need is, either from the community side, that it's a need for the community, or from the ecological side, that it's important for the habitat in one way or another, and really thought about your approach. So really looking for thoughtfulness here. Of course, we have goals that are outlined in our handbook, and we're looking for how your project meets the goals. And as Heather mentioned earlier, this is a fairly competitive process and a competitive grant program, and most often it's that fit that makes the difference. We also look again for partnerships, and we look for active partnerships. So not just partners in name only, but partners that have a role in
the project. This also can be seen also in that organizational preparedness. Again, if you don't have the capability or your organization does not have the capability for one piece or another of your project, looking for partners that do and explaining how they do. And then finally, location and project reach. As I mentioned earlier, we are a metro-wide grant program, and our funding is through a tax metro-wide, and so therefore we look to distribute the funding geographically as well throughout different communities. So I'm going to go through the kind of boring stuff here, which is just the pre-application form. If you wanted to follow along with me, it's in your handbook. I think it's starting on page 8, 9, or 10. This is just really asking for very basic information. The reason that we have it in a table form is so that we can copy and paste it into an Excel spreadsheet. So if you're wondering why we ask you for that format, that's why. The second piece of that is really looking at your partners, and if you have a fiscal agent, again, that's that 501c3 provider, and then asking you for more detail about your project. So in particular, looking at your project title and your project summary, this is the information that's going to go forward on that first page to the review committee. It's really your elevator speech. You want it to be clear and concise and understandable so that people can see right off the bat what you're trying to accomplish and how you're planning on doing it. Do you have a question? Yeah, it was a mistake. So two pages is fine. Category, again, just looking at whether your project is in an urban or a suburban area or whether it's really designed to preserve a natural area. Your project length, and again, looking at that project maintenance, if you need or want that time for additional project maintenance. Habitat type, so this is a very detailed list. This, again, is from the Oregon Conservation Strategy and the Intertwine Regional Conservation Strategy. So these are the way they define their habitats, and so we wanted to have continuity there with those plans. We also took a look at OWEB, so if any of you have applied in the past for OWEB grants, these are very similar to the designations and habitats that are used in the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board grants. And the acres, that gets to kind of your question earlier about acres and cost, it just seemed to be a question that was coming up within our review committee, and so we wanted to be able to provide them that information very clearly and concisely. And then finally, the site location. When we do a review of the grant applications, because, again, this is a metro-wide program, we actually map your site locations so that we can see visually where all of the different programs are occurring throughout the metro region. So if you wonder why we're asking that, that's why. And then finally, some of the stuff that Heather was just talking about in terms of estimated funding. Again, at this level, we're looking for a summary level and estimated funding. We're hoping and expecting that you've done some more detail work to find out these numbers. But at this point, we want to see those high-level numbers. Because the only other thing I would say is, although this says estimated funding, the in the next phase, the full application, it's best if your project is around the same cost. It doesn't need to be perfect, but that is certainly something that our review committee commented on in our last grant cycle, was those programs that very drastically jumped in cost between the pre-application and full application. Yeah. So match is cash or grants, and in-kind is those volunteer hours or other things that are donated. Like if you have a, if your program is using wheelbarrows and they've been donated, that's in kind. It depends. You as OMSI, if you are applying for the grant and it is your time, then it's in kind.
In kind. Yeah.
Yeah. Other questions on that first form? Okay. Yeah. So the way I describe that is if you have an engineer and he or she is doing engineering work, then use their professional rate. But if you have an engineer that is volunteering to do an educational program, that is not his or her profession, and so is at the volunteer rate. So this is a lot of words. You can look at it in your application handbook. But the basic gist of this section, this organizational preparedness, again, is to demonstrate to the review committee that you understand what is necessary in order to implement the project, and that you or your organization has the expertise to be able to fulfill it, or if not, you have partnered or you are planning to hire someone who does. So really talking about your expertise in not necessarily in general, but really focusing on how your expertise will help you to implement this particular project. The project description, again, this is your real opportunity. This is where you get to make your case and tell your story. This is where you get to talk about why this is important to the community or why it's important to the ecological function of an area. It's where you get to give us information about what you're trying to do and how you're going to do it. This is really the meat of your application. And then finally, goals, which again are really important and are included in your handbook. That's what the review committee is looking at. One of the aspects that they're looking at is how well does your project fit the goals of this grant program? And then finally, partnerships, again, really showing that you have active partners that are willing to put in time or effort or engagement opportunities or somehow contribute to this particular program and are really committed to it. And then finally, again, thinking about that location and project reach, we ask for a map. It doesn't have to be a super professional map. We're not expecting you all to be GIS whizzes. We provided a couple of links in the handbook and a couple of different websites that do offer mapping functions that you can use. If you're not comfortable using these, you can use a Google map or a printed map with an X on it. We're really just looking for more information about your project. So a couple of the ones that are included in your handbook that are helpful and could be used where you just take a screenshot and then paste that screenshot into your Word document are things like the regional conservation strategy. Again, this is the viewer that goes along with that larger document that I was talking about earlier. And this has in it, you can see on the left-hand side, it has a series of layers that you click on and click off. But the one that might be most interesting to you is really this high-value habitat. So if you look at this map, you can see those areas in, they're actually purple on this map, that are high value. So it's an option for you. Again, it's not required, but it's something that we wanted to provide to you in case you were interested in using it. The other, this is also the regional conservation strategy, and this is just showing that if you are someone who is comfortable with computers and comfortable with this type of software, you can actually draw the outline of your particular project within this program, and it's fairly intuitive and easy to use. And then the other one is the Equity Atlas, which really is a program that looks at mapping and allows you to see the demographics of the Portland metro area. So it's, again, just another tool that we wanted to make available to you, but, again, not necessary or required. And then finally, at the end of the handbook are some of the resources that we researched in putting together this grant program and might be useful to you as well. And this is that. This answers your question in the back about the full application. So our full application is the pre-application, which is really your narrative, your story, your making the case, plus that documentation to show that this project is indeed feasible. So the 501c3 tax exempt status, so of either your organization or your fiscal agent, your permission to use property if it's not your own, letters of support from your partners, your detailed project budget, scope of work, and looking at evaluation outcomes and measures. So do people have questions about the pre-application or full application, what I just went over? Yeah.
If you're dealing in a watershed and it's within a city, is there federal permits required?
Right, it's a good question. The question is whether or not your project requires a permit and how would you know? And that's where we would be counting on you to use your own expertise or the expertise of your partners to help you figure that out. We are not going to be doing the investigation to determine whether or not you need a permit. We do have people on the review committee who are pretty knowledgeable about this question and would potentially flag it if they thought that you did need a permit and you hadn't realized that. Yeah, I mean, if you're doing in-stream work on a fish, a stream with endangered species, there may be some permits or other consultations required. It really depends on the type of work that you're doing. So,
That question, though, is a great one about consultation. So Heather and I have made our schedules available 2 weeks prior to the date that the pre-application is due. If you want to make an appointment with either of us, we are available to do that. The card of the person that you would need to contact is Oriana Quackenbush, and her card is at the back table if you want to make one of those appointments.
And I will say, we are not restoration experts, so we'll give you as much information as we can based on what we know about restoration best practices, but we may need to point you to somebody else to give you more technical expertise if that's what you need. So if you really have some detailed questions, I would recommend that you get to us earlier than later, waiting to the last minute.
The other resource that is on our website but also on the back table is this Beginner's Guide to Restoration Projects. This was written by our Natural Areas Science team, and so this is obviously not for every restoration project, but for those that have plantings involved in them, it's a great resource or guide on how to do it. It's called Beginner's Guide to Developing Restoration Projects.
Yeah. Question.
That's a good question.
That's a good question. We've got a little bit of musical chairs at the moment because we've got some vacancies in our department. But why don't you, if you don't have somebody that you're already working with at Metro to ask, then why don't you send Chris or I that question and we'll find out who to ask. And again, just to clarify the Metro land, because this did come up, this has come up this year, that while Metroland is not ineligible for these projects, we just want to be really clear that Metro is not—it's not a Metro project, and that's not Metro's benefit. Really, a lot of our land is managed through IGAs, intergovernmental agreements with local governments. So those types of projects are typically eligible. Or if it's a real community-driven project, it happens to be on Metro's land, but it's not really our responsibility, or we haven't taken on that responsibility to do that type of project, then it could be eligible.
Okay, well, the last slide we have is about the review committee. So we are still forming the review committee. As I mentioned earlier, our review committee is formed out of peers. So it's people who work in restoration, conservation education, grant management, volunteer coordination, program planning, and community partnerships. And we have a list of last year's review committee members on our website if you're interested in seeing who was making the recommendations last year. And if you're interested in being on the review committee, it's a really interesting way of seeing all of the different restoration projects and organizations who are working in restoration throughout the Portland metro area. It's very interesting and enlightening. So please talk to either Heather or I if you're interested.
And if you are planning to submit a grant, but you're interested in participating on the grant review and you're wondering about how that works, that's not uncommon for review members to have projects under review, and we do have a conflict of interest policy that we follow where you do not review or comment on your grant, and in some cases, if you have a grant under review, you might be asked to recuse yourself during the discussion about that particular grant. So we try to, we do have a policy about how to handle that.
All right.
That's it from us, but we're happy to stay and take questions for a few minutes, and then we can also talk with you one-on-one about your specific project if you think you have more specific questions. All right. Thanks so much for coming. Really appreciate it. If you didn't get a chance to sign in, please do sign in, and we do share that information.